Well, just follow the rainbow to church tonight, and that's always a good sign, in spite of the forecast and the warnings. It's good to be together. This is I don't know when the phone alarm comes on, warning about the weather, weather advisory. I was expecting a smaller crowd, so thank you, brave souls, for being together tonight. It's good to see each and every one of you. And one more lesson, one more evening. Again, as we've said, we've enjoyed so much our time with you, so much encouragement being with you, worshiping with you again, and stirring up some good memories from some years ago. So good to see new faces, new people, and just wish all of God's blessings on all of you and together all of you in this church. That you can stand and be faithful and serve and be a blessing to this community. Even more importantly, that you'll honor and respect and worship God. He so deserves it for all that He has done. We've been talking about my faith and faithfulness and things that I need to think about in order to remain faithful myself. We've talked about some things that will help us to understand and talk to other people. And that's always a side benefit of our studies, because the things that we learn and take into ourselves and our own thoughts and our own hearts and change our lives, those are the very things that we need to impart and share and bring to others. And the way to bring it is not as looking down on them and leading them as someone superior, but just remembering that we have learned some things through our struggles. We've been told and we have heard of ways and scriptures that will bring us to Christ. And humbly, we share those with other people. It will have its desired effect. So I encourage you to do that. I hope these lessons have helped us in that regard. And so talking about my faith and faithfulness, we've saved Hebrews chapter 11 for the last lesson, and it certainly is the faith chapter, and I've called it, I don't know, no catchy titles, I'm not good at catchy titles, but understanding Bible faith, and the important word there is Bible. Because you can look up the word faith in dictionaries and you can find out what it means, and you can talk to people, you can talk to religious leaders, what is faith, what does it mean, and you'll get answers and you get a variety of kinds of answers. But we want to understand faith as God uses the word and applies the word in Scripture. And Hebrews 11 is just rich. This is maybe the simplest lesson of the week. Because we are going to read down through Hebrews 11. It's a long chapter, so I'm going to move it along pretty well to stay on time. But just follow the sequence down through the chapter to see how faith is described and defined, what it is, what it does. And while it's the simplest lesson, because it's straight from the text, it's the most powerful lesson, again, because we're just going to listen to the words and try to bring them to heart. And I hope that you'll find that at least part of that is true anyway. Before we start looking at Bible faith, just to kind of stir our thoughts, what are we actually talking about here? There, like the word love in our world, love is used in a lot of ways. I love coffee. I love my wife. Those are not the same. I love God. Again, not the same. And, you know, so what does love mean? It's less about this feeling inside of us, and we understand that love is more of a life of service and sacrifice for and to the thing that we love and care for so much. We need to love each other, for example. Just like the word love is used in such a broad way that it's used often without people really understanding what they're saying. The word faith is much the same. And I've got some suggestions on the chart of things that may be what people think of when they think of the word faith. It's a, you know, I have faith, I believe in a higher power. That doesn't quite sound like biblical faith, but that is the way people use the word faith. And believing in a higher power leaves that in a mystery. I don't know anything about it. And we're going to find that along with the rest of these is not really what the Bible is talking about. So belief in the existence of a higher power is some conception of faith. My personal opinion about how the whole world started, and my opinion is what I believe. But that's not Bible faith. That's using what I believe. Well, that's another word for my opinion is, my conclusion is. Feelings about right and wrong. You know, this is right, this is wrong. There's some things that you're really not supposed to do. And so that's my faith. And so again, that's a standard that I've written. Wishful thinking. You know, if you live a good life, good things are going to happen to you. That's probably true on at least a limited basis for sure. But you know what? You live a good life and some bad things are going to happen to you too. And so, but wishful thinking. If I do this, then here's what's going to happen. Why do you say that? Well, because I believe. And again, wishful thinking. That's not biblical faith. And I'm not saying it's terrible to have these opinions and draw these conclusions. It's not a terrible thing necessarily to have these feelings in our convictions. Oftentimes, a conviction is a strong conclusion. So we really believe it. We really hold on to it. So it carries more strength with it. A conviction that maybe I got from my parents. This is what I believe and this is the way I live because that's what my parents have taught me. Or this is what my friends think and all the people that I associate with. Or it's really come from my own imagination or come from my own personal experiences or the things that I desire and I have labeled as important. And so that becomes my convictions and that governs the way I live. Well, that is the way people use the word faith, but again, that's not Bible faith. And I think as we talk to other people, we need to understand that they don't have the same definitions for a lot of the spiritual words that we use. And when I say faith, they think something that I'm not talking about. That doesn't mean I'm right. If I'm speaking according to the Bible, that's what means I'm right. But we need to understand that people don't always use words the same way I do and that maybe you do. So claiming to believe something is not necessarily Bible faith. Now we're in Hebrews 11. Hebrews chapter 11, we're going to start in verses 1, 2, and 3 right here. How does God define faith? And I think this is limited. This is not the only way God defines faith, but this is the way He defines it here. In verse 1, now faith is, now we hear it coming, right? This is it. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. 3, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen are not made out of things that are visible. And so what is faith? Faith is the substance of things hoped for. Some say the evidence of things hoped for. Let's go with the word substance for now anyway. Substance means there's something material here that you can hold on to. And metaphorically we talked about now what he says has substance. Well, what do you mean by that? There's merit there. There's something worthwhile that you can hold on to in a metaphorical way. Because you can't hold on to his words. But so faith is the substance of things hoped for. What do you hope for? Whatever you hope for spiritually, heaven is probably one thing on the list. To live eternally in the presence of God is something I hope for. So what does faith do? Faith is the substance of things hoped for. Is heaven real? It's absolutely real. I used the illustration about California for a while, and I finally went there, so it doesn't work anymore. I'll still use it. Never been to California, but I know it's there. In fact, I am so convinced that California is there, it's almost like Bible faith. I can almost see it and feel it. I'm absolutely certain that California exists. Of course, then we did visit it finally, and we could see it, and so now it's not faith anymore, right? It's sight. But which is more real to you? Is California, let's say you, for those who have never been to California, or think Spain, if you've been to California, but you've never been to Spain, which place is more real to you? Spain or heaven? Which one is real, like more real in your mind? Faith gives Spain nothing. But Bible faith gives heaven reality. It exists. It is real. And I'm planning to go there, even though I've got no plans to go to Spain. And I kind of do have plans summer after next to go to California, because we're convinced that they're there. But I am investing and planning and arranging so that I will be in heaven. I haven't picked a date yet, but I'm going. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. Christians need to live with a sense of reality about spiritual things. We talk about the temple. We've got the spiritual temple, which is heaven. It's either heaven or it's also a metaphor for the people of God who are built up as a spiritual house unto the Lord, the spiritual temple. And then you've got the temple made of stones in Solomon's day. Which one of those is the real temple? Not Solomon's. Solomon's is a prototype. It's a model. It's a picture of the real temple. The real temple is the one that is both invisible and untouchable, because it is not material, it is spiritual. But faith is substance. It gives substance to the things that are hoped for, and the things that we know. And so it gives evidence for the things not seen, also in verse 1. That's what faith does. And we should not be satisfied until the spiritual world, the spiritual life, the spiritual things and spiritual realities are more real, certainly more important than anything that we can touch or taste or feel or visit here in this life. This is the prototype life with God. If you're a Christian, you enjoy life with God, but you're still in the prototype. You're still in the model. Faith tells us where we're going, and that is a real place to believers. And so, while a common definition for faith may be it's trust or confidence or what is concluded to be true that we haven't seen yet, as God describes it, faith's bigger than that. It's not just trust and confidence. It turns what you cannot see into the ultimate real thing. I think it's a powerful idea. And so it makes visible the things that we cannot see. Look at verse 27 in the same chapter. By faith, Moses, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Moses could see God. That was the nature of his faith. Can you see God? Now, all of us have in our imagination a picture of the image of God. And probably all of us understand that that's probably not what he looks like, actually. But you got to put something there. But is God real? Can you see him? Can you see him as you read the scriptures? Can you see him as you see spiritual things being done and the way of Christ being carried out? That's God at work. God at work. Do we see that? And that is what faith does. It makes those things real. And so, by extension, another idea that's closely connected is in verse 3. By faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that the things which are seen are not made of things which are visible. What do we believe about this world? This world is seen. We know what this world is like. We live in it. We touch it. We know the world. But where did it come from? We know that too. We know that the world that we can see was not made from things that can be seen. We know that this world was made from nothing. Made out of nothing material. The material world is a new existence. The spiritual world is the ancient world, where God lived and God spoke this world into existence. And faith says, that's what happened. And we trust that. And we can visualize that. Because the spiritual, again, the spiritual is the real thing. The world is temporary. Deity is eternal. And deity has made us to be eternal. And so we begin to understand faith. Faith is bigger sometimes than we thought it was. And we, all of us, need to try to grow, consider these truths, and let that kind of faith make us stronger. At the bottom of the chart, you can see that there is a reward for faith. And again, a little same theme here. Let's try to get ourselves out of the material and into the spiritual, because that's really the only thing that matters. And I've got here on the chart that the reward for faith is the testimony of God. Well, you know, I'd rather have a nice house. I'd really like a better job. I have been praying and wishing for, and if I'm a good person and a faithful man to the Lord, I'll find a good spouse. And so we look for material blessings from God, don't we? We thank God for the material blessings that we have, but we've got an inclination to want a few more of those things. And so we look to God to bless us and to reward our righteousness, sometimes in physical ways. But that's not what it's about. What is it you really want from God more than anything else? You don't have to speak up, but I want you to think about it. What do you want from God more than anything else? Let's look at Hebrews chapter 11 and notice the reward for faith. In verse 2, for by it, that's faith that he's defining in verse 1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. And for by it, that faith, the elders obtained a good testimony. Does that strike you as kind of anticlimactic? Well, then I'm not thinking spiritually. You got a good testimony? What is a good testimony? That's like when you're in front of the manager and it's the review and the manager looks at, yeah, it looks like you did pretty well. You did a good job. That's a good testimony. He's speaking up on your behalf and said you did good. Is that really what we get out of faith? Okay, that's what it says in verse 2. Look at verse 4. For by faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous. God testifying of his gifts, and through it being dead, he still speaks. Abel did a good job. Wow. God said he did a good job. That's what faith will get us. Verse 5. By faith, Enoch, when he was taken away so that he did not see death, he was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. That's what faith got Enoch. Well, he also got to go straight to heaven, but he got the testimony. And then we go to verse 16. But now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. God's not ashamed to be your God. I hope my parents are not ashamed to be my mom and dad, right? We understand that concept. God is not ashamed that we're his people. And there again is an unspoken testimony. That's what God thinks about us. And then go all the way to 39, near the end of the chapter 11. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. Well, they didn't receive it in their lifetime. We'll get to that part later. But what did they get? They obtained a good testimony. You know, the first time, you see it in verse 2, and it kind of, faith will give us a good testimony. And then you realize, man, this is a repeated concept through the chapter. We read how many? 5, I think 5 verses that talks about God's testimony. So let's pause there. What's it going to be like when the creator of the universe looks you in the eye and says, you did good? Whoa. We need to think about these things thoughtfully in order to feel the impact of what the scripture is telling us. Is there anything in life that you would trade for a good testimony from God? Well, God kind of teaches us that we need to trade everything. Trade away everything for that good testimony for God. There's nothing that you would keep instead of giving it up in order to get that testimony from God. Because when God speaks to our life and says, good job, faithful servant, you did the right thing, I saw your sacrifice, when God gives us a good testimony, there's no treasure that matches that. If we can picture a moment in a child's life when one or both of the parents look at them and catch them in this moment and really give them a praise and thanks for doing a good thing. They feel so good. That's one of the greatest gifts you can give your children. And now we see, well, of course, right? What does a child want more than the good pleasure of his parents? There's a lot of things on a moment-by-moment basis that seem to get in the way of that. But in the big picture, children that know their parents are not happy with them are miserable. Every child needs to know that their parent is pleased with them. And we are children of God, and we need His testimony. And faith is what enables us to see that and helps us to understand that. So we're going to have to pick up the pace here. We're just in verse 3. But now, let's look at some of the things that faith is and does. What is faith? Or rather, what does faith do? What it is and what it does. And so we're going to kind of go down through this, not looking at all of these verses carefully, but we're going to notice. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. And there's a lot of debate about how his was better. Some say, well, he offered it by faith. Abel did not offer by faith. Well, but what does that mean? Well, Abel did what God said, and Abel did not do what God said. Well, that makes sense. The text doesn't say that's exactly what happened, but that makes good sense to me, because he offered this sacrifice, it pleased God. He offered that sacrifice, it did not please God. Some say it was a heart matter, some say it was what they brought, but regardless of that, regardless of where the mistake was, and usually conduct is wrong because the heart is wrong, typically, but what makes it all right? Faith. And we believe God, we believe what He says, and we react as though we have confidence in Him. And when we live by faith, we're going to offer better sacrifices. That may mean we start giving more. It may mean we start listening to His instructions more carefully. There's a variety of things that it might mean. But if we offer our sacrifices to God by faith, they will always be better. And we see that in verse 4. In verse 5, Enoch, who was taken so that he did not see death and was not found because God took him, he got the testimony that God was pleased with him. What did his faith do for him? It gave him express lane to heaven. Now, who else gets that? Well, God didn't intend for us to come to the conclusion that if we behave well enough, we get to go straight to heaven like Enoch. But God did give us a story that says, you know, this is ultimately what it's all about. You want life with me, and you want it in eternity. And that's what Enoch got. And Enoch got that because he walked by faith, and he pleased God in his life. In a chapter of the Bible where everybody does what? Dies. Some of them lived 600 years. Some of them lived 800 years. Some of them lived over 900 years. But Enoch didn't die. He's the only one. What do you think the point of that chapter is? There's death all around us. But faith will enable us to hold on to the concept of eternal life, and it will bring us to it. Just like Enoch. And by just like, I don't mean in the same manner. But I mean, in as much as he received eternal life, so can we. Go to, I need to remember my clicker, excuse me. And go to verses 7 through 8 and notice that faith, Bible faith, will respond to revelation from God. Faith is not believing in God and then deciding how we're going to make him happy. Faith is listening to the God in whom we trust. And look at 7. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear to the preparing of an ark by which he for the saving of his family, by which he condemned the world and became the heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. Noah was warned. He didn't decide. He didn't dream. He didn't think up a plan of what can I do for God. He let God tell him what to do, and he did exactly what God told him to do. And the details of that are significant. We learn that obedience is careful to get it exactly right. In verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed, which demands instructions. You can't obey if there's no instructions. Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place where he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. So me deciding I believe God and determining that I really love God, I need to please Him, I'm going to, and fill in the blank, that's not Bible faith. Bible faith is I believe God, not just in Him, but I believe God and I'll do anything He tells me. Now we're talking Bible faith. Go a little bit further in verses 7 and 8 and 9. Faith will take us to lonely places. In verse 7, we've got Noah. Remember, he was the only one. I just get the feeling that Noah was a lonely man. Starts building the ark. People start asking him questions, and he starts preaching righteousness. And nobody wants to get in that boat with him. That instruction, follow me, that God gave Noah, took him to a place where he became a lonely man in this world. Let's look at verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed to go to a place that God would show him. He went out not knowing where he was going. That meant he didn't know anybody in the future land. And he left his family and his co-workers and his neighbors. He left everybody he knew. And he went, verse 9, and by faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs of the same promise. He was always an immigrant, migrant worker. Those people, I'm almost embarrassed to use that phrase, those people. It's a little demeaning, isn't it? But I'm illustrating exactly how the world looks at them. And they don't fit in, and they're not a part. I mean, eventually and ultimately maybe, but in the eyes of some, they never become a part. It's lonesome to be a foreigner in a strange land. And Abraham, he lived in tents. He didn't move into the city. He lived in the wilderness. Faith will take you to some lonely places too. Some places where you're by yourself. Nobody agrees with you. Nobody feels like you do. Nobody wants to associate with you. Now that's not every day all day. But there's times. And some of you have already experienced some of those times. The loneliness of being faithful to God. Look at verses 11 and 12. Faith will enable us to do anything, or at least everything that God wants us to do. Verse 11 and 12. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. You know, one of the reasons that we need to be faithful is because he's faithful. God will never let you down. He will never disappoint you. He will never turn his back on you as long as your face is toward him. He's faithful. And she judged God faithful. We know the moments of doubt of Sarah when she laughed, when they said, this time next year you'll have a son. And she laughed. And then she was embarrassed when she realized she was caught and denied it. I said, no, I wasn't laughing. You know, we're like Sarah. Sarah's like us. We're not that different. And sometimes, even as people of faith, great faith, we have moments of doubt or questioning or really. And sometimes it takes us a bit to come around and get on board with the Lord. But Bible faith always will. Bible faith will put the trust in God regardless of what he says. You're going to have a child, Sarah. You got to be kidding. Mary said, how can I? I do not know a man. Unless you explain, I'm not sure I get this. But Sarah was past the age of childbearing. I'll say she was 90, right? Wasn't she 90? I think she was 90 when she conceived. She'd never had a child because she had been barren her whole life. Abraham and Sarah were trying to have a child because they knew that's what they were supposed to do. And God said no. He kept saying no until it would be obvious that the child was a child from God by His blessing. And Romans chapter 4 goes into details about this faith of Abraham and Sarah, because it describes them, Abraham not considering his own body as dead. He was dead as far as child conceiving is concerned. He couldn't produce the seed. She could not receive it. They could not together have a child. But what did they do? They did what people do in order to have children. And it didn't matter how old they were. So, that's faith. That's faith. And faith will enable us to do the impossible things. And so verse 12, therefore from one man and him as good as dead were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. The nation came about. And it started with Abraham and Sarah, a barren woman and an ancient man, and Isaac was born. And he was the chosen, he was the one that would be the beginning of that nation of Israel. Go a little bit further. Faith trusts God when it does not make any sense. You know, a lot of us, we want to believe God and we want to do what God says. But we look at a passage and it doesn't make sense. We look at instructions and it doesn't make sense. I'll pick up a touchy subject right here. Withdrawing ourselves from an unfaithful brother or sister in Christ. How are we going to help him if we kick him out? And so maybe it doesn't make sense to me. We need to show love. That's how. And I don't want to get into a discussion of all of that, because there's merit on both sides of that conversation. It depends on where we are in this process. But there are things that God says that we might react with, I don't think that works, or I don't believe that, or that doesn't make sense. But faith, it follows the word even when it doesn't make sense. Look at chapter 11, verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, that son that they waited for so long. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. Who said that? God said that. God said to Abraham, Isaac is the son. Ishmael's not it. And Eliezer, your servant, is not it. It's Isaac. God said, Isaac is the one. And verse 19, concluding that God was able to raise up even from the dead, from which also he received him in a figurative sense. So what's happened there? See, let's go back to the beginning. When Abraham was tested, what did he do? God said, offer your only son Isaac on an altar. And so he packs up. They travel to Mount Moriah because he's going to offer his son Isaac on the altar. Do I remember right? It took them 3 days to get there. I mean, it was a journey. That's a long time to think this over, right? I don't know. It's a long time to believe God and just do what you're told no matter what. This does not make sense. Why doesn't it make sense, Abraham? Well, because this is supposed to be the son of promise. Not only is it the only son that me and Sarah have presently, God could give us another one, I guess. But no, that can't be it, because God said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. What is the one conclusion that Abraham could come to? God will raise him from the dead. When have you ever seen God raise anybody from the dead, Abraham? But to Abraham, God said Isaac is the son. And so what does that mean? Isaac is the son. And God says, sacrifice him on an altar. And so what does that mean? I sacrifice him on the altar. God has to work out whatever it is I can't understand. This is one of the incredible moments in the Bible that just always kind of stops me. And I'm just glad I'm not Abraham. I'm not sure. You know, I won't even finish that sentence, because I have to be sure. I have to do what God says, don't we? We have to do what God says. And it enables us to do that. Abraham did it. What's the text say? by faith. He knew. This was reality. This is the truth. Faith looks beyond this life. In verse 20 and through 22, by faith Isaac, he wasn't killed, he's still alive. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. What that means is he had these two sons and he blessed them about the spiritual future. When he reiterated the promises and things. So, and that Isaac did that when he was about to die. And verse 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. He said to one, you're Ephraim. He said to the other, you're Manasseh. And here's what it's going to be like. You're going to have a double portion in the land and the tribes. And what are you talking about, Isaac? You guys are going back to the promised land. You see, he knows that. By faith, he looks beyond his life. God's not going to finish the job in me. This is long term. And I will live my faith, my part faithfully. It's bigger than me and my moment on earth right now. By faith, we will look at a bigger picture of things. One more verse. Where is it? In verse 22. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. What did he want happen to his bones? He says, when you go back to the promised land, you take my bones and you bury them there. Well, when's that going to happen? Well, it was a couple of centuries after Joseph died. But the passing of time does not diminish the promise of God. You know, I make a promise and the days go by. The longer, the more days go by, the less chance you're getting that promise from me, right? I forget. I forgot about that. You probably don't care anymore anyway. God makes a promise. It doesn't matter how many centuries go by. His word is good. And faith lives like that, with a trust in God's eternal word. And so many of the promises are, they're not even going to be given to us in this life. And when I say us in this life, I'm speaking for Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph down through the centuries. And us too, actually. But a little bit further in verses 24 through 26, faith will always choose the spiritual over the material. Look at verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Remember, he was hidden in the basket as his parents were trying to save his life, hiding out in the bulrushes of the river. And Pharaoh's daughter finds him and adopts him and brings him into the palace. And he grows up in the house of Pharaoh. And this text says that when he became of age, he refused to be called that woman's daughter. Whew. You got to have some convictions to do that. You don't want to hurt the feelings of the daughter of the Pharaoh. Well, verse 25 says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked for the reward. I cannot imagine any part of that statement that refers to a physical reward or a physical promise or a physical blessing that Moses knew would come. Moses understood by faith that it's not about a palace or a bank account or a pile of gold coins. It's not about living in this mansion and having people bow down to you. None of that has any merit or value. Moses said, I'd be better off suffering with the people of God than enjoying sin and looking forward to material riches. He says, I'm looking for something else. And Moses chose the spiritual over the physical. Not too many of us get that choice on the scale that Moses had to make the choice. But we've all got the same choices on a day-to-day basis. Do we choose the material over the spiritual? I need this raise. Or I need that money. Or whatever it might be when we make our choices. We need to, if we are believers, we need to choose the spiritual first. We need to be content and able to wait and endure. And this may be this is the last one on this list, just so you know. On this list, that's the last one. We need to be content to wait and endure because all of these people were waiting and waiting and waiting for long periods of times, lifetimes even. Look at verses 9 and 10, first of all. This is about Abraham when he was called to go to this land that he had never seen. It says in 9, by faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He waited and he waited and he waited. What was the city that God was going to build? We might first think, well, Jerusalem. He built Jerusalem, Zion of the Old Testament, and the temple there, the house of God there. Well, Abraham never saw that, but that's what he looked to. And he knew it was coming. And it did not matter that he would not be alive when it came, at least not alive on this earth when it came, but he knew that that's something that he would be able to experience. At least in a spiritual sense. But then we think about it and say, well, that city and that temple wasn't made without hands. It was made by man's hands. Solomon and his crew, David and his servants, they built Zion and they built the temple. So the city with foundations whose builder and maker is God isn't even that one. So which one is it? Abraham was waiting for heaven. That's where the city is that is built without hands. Abraham's been waiting longer than you have. He was waiting his whole life for something he would never see. Look at 13 through 16. Now we can add some of the children to the story. But these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. You see that? They could see them. Not with their eyes, but with their faith. They could see these things. They could see them afar off. They were assured of them, embraced them, confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they are called to mind to that country from which they came out, they would have had opportunity to go back. They could have turned around, go back to their lives, go back to their cities, go back to their homes. The verse says they had a chance to do that. They didn't want to do that because they were looking forward. And they were looking forward by faith to a time and a place and a promise that could only be seen by faith. Verse 16, but now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared for them a city. This idea of living this life of suffering and service and trying to hold on to faith and serve Jesus so He can go to heaven one day, that didn't start with the new covenant promises. That's been the way it has been since the very beginning of God's plan. Abraham's been doing it. Abraham walked by faith and look forward to heaven. He wanted the city that God would build. We get to jump down a little farther in the chapter, verse 32. And what more shall I say? It's five till, I know that. And I'm going to be done by the time it's straight up. I'm going to be done. What more shall I say? That means he's got lots, right? He's got lots to say. But he's going to wrap it up. But this paragraph, I used to just look at, this is the wrap up. You know, here's just a list of, here's a whole bunch of people who believe. But there's a message here. And I want us to look at the message, read with me. The faithful are not alone. We feel like Abraham was all alone. The faithful are not alone. Many brothers and sisters of all kinds endure all kinds of things. You are not alone. Let's listen to it. 32 through 37. What more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon. Maybe, think about how many stories of these you remember. Some of them you will, some of them you won't. Gideon, Barak, and Samson, and Jephthah, also of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the enemies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting the deliverance that they might have, that they might obtain a better resurrection. You catch that? A lot of these faithful people had really beautiful and wonderful and glorious outcomes. And some of them were tortured and murdered. But what'd they get? They got the glorious outcome. I think it was messy there at the end. You see, it's not all just like magic and all goody-goody. They were champions in their faith, and they conquered in their faith. But some of them only conquered by dying for their faith. Verse 36, still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. We read that and we realize that's a lot of people, and that's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of victory, and there's a lot of victory that came at the ultimate cost. What is faith and what does it do? And this is part of it. But if we look at this list of people, these people were not alone. Remember the story of Elijah, who finally said, Lord, they've killed all the prophets. I am the only one that's left. I've just come here. Let me die. And God said, you're not the only one left. I got 7,000 you don't even know about. We're not alone. It feels like it sometimes, but we're not alone. Next verse. The world is not worthy of the faithful. You don't belong in this world. This world does not understand you. And you will not be fulfilled in this world. You are beyond this world. Now, God's words read this way in verse 38. Of whom, it's referring to all those people, some who had victory in battle and some who were tortured and murdered. Both of them, all of them. Of whom the world was not worthy. Here's where the testimony of God comes in. Every faithful servant of God shines and is lifted up and is honored and measured by God to be worthy to live somewhere better than here. You don't belong here with the rest of this rabble. You don't belong with those who are unbelievers and deceivers and liars and thieves and adulterers. It's not that you're so perfect, but you have been forgiven in the blood of Christ. And you have determined that you will trust me and follow me. The world isn't worthy of you. That's a powerful statement in verse 38. All those people, the world didn't deserve them to be their neighbors. That's what it's talking about. Well, let's go a little bit further. We're almost to the end of this one. 39 through 40. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. Whoa, that was a surprise, right? They didn't get the promise? God, having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. And this is almost like a jab, said, you know what, those people, you admire them, right? Are you amazed at those servants we just read about, those names? Wow. Well, guess what? They did not realize the fulfillment of the promise. But who does then? He says, you do. You do. Because the promise didn't really come into effect and into reality until Jesus died on the cross. Now, they get the promise eventually, but they don't get it before you do. And God is lifting us up. And I think that's the leverage that he's using here is, don't you see how important you are and the advantage that you have and the opportunity that's been given to you? They did not receive the promise. So you just get over it. You're tired. You're frustrated. You wish somebody would give you a break. Get over it and hang on, because you haven't been at it as long as they have. and you've got Christ in front of you. God prepared something better that would ultimately be fulfilled in those of whom Paul spoke when he wrote this, those New Testament Christians. And so they received the promise of God and they had to wait. They had to wait. And we have to wait too. Therefore, verse 1 and 2 of 12, therefore we also, let's bring it home. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. That's all these people, those names he named. It's like we're in a stadium and we're on the field competing in the race. And they're in the stadium looking down at the field. We're surrounded by the great cloud of witnesses. Lay aside every weight and sin which easily ensnares us. Run with endurance. There's the time, the passing of time, and the continued perseverance in effort. Run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Despising the shame, he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What does it mean, despising the shame? Well, they embarrassed Jesus by slapping him and insulting him and taking all of his clothes off and nailing him to a cross. And then everybody sits around and yells and laughs and celebrates the death of this stupid man. That's the shame. And what did it say? He endured the shame. No, he didn't just endure the shame. He despised the shame. He says, "You are the fools." He felt no shame. And we need to despise the shame. We need to realize the insults and the discouragements that we face. We feel sorry for you. The world is not worthy of those who believe. And we need to follow Christ and enjoy that victory that comes through Him. The promise will be there. As we finish it, I want to suggest that you, pardon me here, I want to suggest that we all just determine to be people of faith and hold on with all you've got. And when doubts arise, don't panic or be afraid. Talk to people, read the Bible, lift yourself up, pray. You can stand. You can do this. Abraham just did what God said. We picture him with big muscles, I guess. I don't know. As a man with a steel jaw and this concrete forehead that nobody could touch. Abraham was a person, just like you. He just trusted God and believed that he ought to do anything God said. Live that way, and we will join God in heaven one day, as Enoch did. If you're subject in any way to the call of the gospel, please come to the front as we stand and sing.